From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
On the panel this week, Philippe Gelly, U.S. Chief Correspondent for Le Figaro, and Oren Durrell, Foreign Affairs Reporter for USA Today. Our moderator is the White House Correspondent for West Wing Reports, Paul Brandis.
Hello, thank you for joining us, and here are the issues. Historic peace talks between the leaders of North and South Korea. The nuclear deal between six global powers and Iran is in jeopardy, or is it? And finally, more comings and goings in the Trump White House. Well, let's start in Korea, gentlemen. Dramatic meeting this week between the leaders of North Korea and South Korea. Just stunning imagery of a Kim Jong-un, the North Korean leader, actually stepping into South Korean territory. Tell our global listeners, and we'll start with you, Philippe. Tell us, what did they talk about and what came of it?
Well, apparently they agreed to put an end to the war, which has been lasting for six decades, which is not a small thing. And they also agreed to denuclearize the whole peninsula. There is a kind of a timetable for ending the war and having a peace treaty, which would be supposedly in the coming year. There is no timetable for the denuclearization, which might be a problem because I think that the White House and President Trump would insist on them moving quite fast on that as well.
The fact that they're talking about denuclearization, they've talked about this before. There was actually an agreement way back in 1992, for example. This was before the North had its first nuclear weapon, but they agreed in theory that there should not be nuclear weapons on the peninsula and so forth. So how seriously should we take these kind of proclamations?
So you're right. They've said a lot of things in the past, and we'll really have to see what they put in place to make this happen. I mean, all of these proclamations have to be taken seriously, but the proof is going to be in, you know, whether they agree to inspections and whether they agree to dismantlement and whether they agree to all these things that have to happen that the Americans are going to demand. That would be a true denuclearization. Trump has said that he wants them to get rid of all their nukes, you know, but there's kind of a question about what this term of denuclearization actually means.
And it's not just North Korean nuclear weapons, of course. It's believed that the United States has nuclear weapons as well. Are those included? We're not quite sure.
The United States does not have weapons in South
Korea. They have them in the region.
In the region. They have them in Japan and in Guam.
There is this
umbrella. And on ships nearby. They removed them after the end of the Cold War. But for the South Korea, you know, this, they came out with a disjoint statement about ending hostile acts. And it mentions, hostile acts on land, sea, and air. And for the South, that means U.S. exercises. And that implies they're referring to the anti-ballistic missile THAAD program that the Americans have put in South Korea. So when they talk about denuclearization, they're talking about what they want the Americans to do. That's going to be very hard pill for the Americans to accept.
And, of course, the backdrop to all of this, gentlemen, are these... this upcoming meeting that supposedly is still on track between President Trump and North Korea's Kim. We're not quite sure where that's going to take place. You just explained what the North Koreans want. President Trump this week, I think, defined what denuclearization means. He said giving up all their nukes. Well, what about missile tests? What about nuclear research? What about this and that? I mean, there's a big gray area here that still has not been clarified.
It's true. And when the new Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, testified before Congress, he talked about something very interesting, which was, you know, what we really want is to keep the North Koreans from having a weapon with which they can threaten the United States. And then he also said that they're trying to stop North Korea from having a huge arsenal compared to a very small arsenal. The North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, said in his New Year's speech, he talked about North Korea being at a point at which they've perfected the technology of nuclear weapons and missiles, but now they're ready to start mass producing. And they could produce an enormous arsenal of hundreds of weapons, which would be hard for the United States to counter with what it has right now with its anti-ballistic equipment. So the issue is really, I mean, even Mike Pompeo was talking about this, is really, are they talking about getting rid of their nukes, or are they talking about reducing or limiting or freezing the program where it is, and we don't really know where it's going to end.
And Philippe, a question for you. These North Koreans, again, these dealings with them, which go back literally decades, how can we even trust what they've said? They have a long history of saying things, making promises that, in fact, they then down right. the road have broken. So how do you verify something when you're dealing with a country like that?
Well, I think they will use the argument of trust on their side as well. I think Kim Jong-un still sees his nukes as his life insurance for the regime and for the survival of his country. I think he's focused on the process, whereas the U.S. and probably President Trump is more focused on the end game, the result, the neutralizing this threat that he sees for the United States. So far, the moves are very encouraging and positive, and we shouldn't be maybe too skeptical about has been happening. But you have to remain doubtful that you can really get rid of all the nuclear arsenal that the North has.
You mentioned something that's a very important point. If you look about it, and we've talked about this before, I think, you know, it was just a couple of weeks ago that the United States attacked Syria, and some analysts have said, well, if the North Koreans did not have nuclear weapons, we would be more inclined to take that kind of action against them. So to your point, these nuclear weapons, are there security guarantee against some kind of an American attack? Is that a reasonable point?
Absolutely. And we have to notice as well that so far, in spite of all those good news coming from Panmunjom, nothing new has been said. I mean, nothing has been said that hadn't been said at one point or another in the past. Even the goal of reaching a peace treaty, of course, denuclearization of the whole peninsula, which means for the North, the American umbrella should be removed. So it's nice what we've been seeing between the North and South presidents, but it's far from the end of the story. And you have to add in the equation the personality of President Trump, which is quite different from President Moon, JN from the South, and that can, you know, create sparks with the personality of Kim Jong-un.
What does that mean?
Well, those two men are not the average reasonable, quiet leader that you can have sit at a table and negotiate quietly. The president of the United States has been tweeting on North Korea to new extremes, from threatening to destroy entirely the country, to celebrating the end of the war this Friday in a tweet. So where is he standing exactly between those two extremes? That is something we're going to see when they sit together.
Okay, I'm sure we're going to be talking more about this in the coming weeks. Let's move on to another hotspot, and that, of course, is Iran. This landmark nuclear deal that was reached in 2015, 3 years ago, appears to be in jeopardy. President Trump, as everybody knows, has always said that it's a terrible deal. It's not tough enough on Tehran, this kind of thing. So does his new Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, who we were just talking about. But as you know, this is not a U.S.-Iran deal, as Trump often characterizes it. It's actually a U.S., Britain, France, Germany, Russia, China deal with Tehran. Quite complicated. What can President Trump and Pompeo really do about the Iran deal, given just the complexities of all these other powers that are involved? We'll start with you, Warren.
Well, they have the power to pull the United States out of the deal and to reimpose sanctions and to impose sanctions on U.S. allies that do business with Iran. They can do that, and they can probably shut the deal down. The French president was here, Emmanuel Macron was here, basically to persuade Trump or to persuade the U.S. Congress not to go that route. The president and his advisors have concerns, which Macron basically said are valid concerns and that he wants to work on. about what they call the sunset clauses of the Iran nuclear deal. There are elements of the limits on the Iran's nuclear activity that are lifted over a period of time.
And that's what, 15 years?
By 2020, I believe, or 2025.
2025.
Right.
Yeah. But there are different things that are lifted at different times, and by the end of that time period, Iran can produce a an industrial scale nuclear enrichment program. It's still supposed to remain peaceful, but it would be a lot easier to do things on the sly and to cheat with such a big program in Iran, and that's what the president wants to prevent. And Macron basically endorsed the goal of preventing that. There's also a lot of concerns about Iran's ballistic missile program, which is a delivery system for nuclear and other types of weapons of mass destruction, like chemical, and about Iran's support of terrorism and militias around the Middle East and multiple countries. And Macron endorsed all of these and said that he wants to work on all of these. Trump would like to be included in the Iran deal. Macron is saying, let's make a new agreement. Let's keep the Iran deal and make a new agreement that addresses these problems.
Okay, we're not done on Iran. More to talk about, but let's take a short break just for a moment. More Issues in the News in just a moment.
Issues in the News is coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. And don't forget to like us on Facebook. Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel. Philippe Jelly, U.S. Chief Correspondent for Le Figaro, and Oren Durell, Foreign Affairs Reporter for USA Today. Our moderator is Paul Brandis, the White House Correspondent for West Wing Reports.
Well, we were talking about Iran just a minute ago and the visit this week of the French President Philippe. Your thoughts on what he talked about, and go into depth a bit more on what the French president wants to do. And it differs somewhat from what President Trump has talked about to some degree.
Well, I think the calculation on the part of President Macron was to take President Trump on board in kind of a broader multilateral endeavor regarding Iran, to include in the negotiations what you mentioned, that is, the ballistic program, the activities of Iran in the region, in Iraq, in Syria, in Yemen, and also the sunset clauses that you mentioned. And I think his hope was that in exchange of opening the negotiations on those fronts, he could convince President Trump to keep the first pillar, as he called it, of this four-pillar broad negotiation, and the first pillar being the JCPOA, i.e. the nuclear agreement that is already existing. But at the end of his visit, he downplayed this hope. He said that his calculation, his bet, as he said, is that President Trump will get rid of the deal on his own for domestic reasons. He said he has no inside information about that, but that that's just the simple analysis of everything President Trump has said about this deal.
So the issue with that is that Trump can also do half measures. He can pull the United States out, but leave it up to Congress whether to what to do with those sanctions. There are things that he might be able to do that are sort of, you know, that kind of go halfway and allow the allies to remain in the deal. And I think
it's under consideration in the administration that there would be a low level of sanctions reestablished right now, maybe more in July. And in the meantime, the Americans would see if the Europeans are able to progress on the other fronts of the negotiation.
Now, some of these other leaders, German Chancellor Merkel, who is visiting the United States right now, Chinese President Xi and Vladimir Putin in Russia, they, to some degree, have essentially said this is the best deal that can be gotten. And they, in general, have opposed kind of tearing us up or at least partially walking back from it, as the president says. So how is that all going to play out, Oren?
We'll have to see. The Iranians also say that this is the only deal that they're willing to negotiate, and that if one party pulls out, that the whole deal falls apart. And that they will, you know, they've said that they will have to consider their options. And of course, that would include restarting their nuclear program. But politicians say things, and we'll see what they do.
Yeah, but President Macron has been arguing that it would be silly and even insane, he said, to withdraw from the Iran deal if you don't have a plan B, if you have nothing to put in this stead. And especially at the time when you want to negotiate another nuclear deal with North Korea. It makes sense, but in President Trump's logic, you might argue the other way around. And I've heard, for instance, Victor Shah, former member of National Security Council here and a specialist of Asia, arguing that maybe in President Trump's mind, withdrawing from the Iran deal and going to see Kim Jong-un then and say, you see, this Iran deal, it was not good enough for me, so you will have to do better than that. So it can place both sides, and it's not because President Trump is about to negotiate such a deal with the North Korean that it will now not withdraw from the Iran deal.
So give us your forecast on what's going to happen here.
Well, I will stand with my president. I think he's the one who's had all these conversations with President Trump. If he says that he has no hope, I mean, in his position, if he could get out of this visit, state visit, a lot of ceremonial, very much welcomed here, but in the end, the test of the visit was to be the May 12 decision by this administration. And he didn't want to be disavowed, you know, like 2 weeks after being here. By preempting this outcome that the president, the U.S. president would withdraw from the Iran deal, I think he's playing quite smart, a smart game because he remains the European leader, this administration, this American administration is going to talk to, whatever happens.
Okay.
I thought that the speech that Macron made to Congress was very interesting because he talked about the Iran deal, but he also talked about a lot of other things about
climate change.
Well, climate change. He basically talked about Trump's entire agenda and described it as a danger to the free world. And he was speaking not to Trump at that point. He was speaking to Congress and to the American people. And I thought it was very bold. And, you know, considering how warm the relations were between Macron and President Trump, it was a very interesting move. But it shows that we're in a dangerous spot.
All right. Moving on here, we mentioned a couple of minutes ago that there is a new Secretary of State here in the United States, Mike Pompeo, the former CIA director, member of Congress, and all of that. Getting him confirmed was a big win for the president, but he also lost a big one when Dr. Ronnie Jackson, his nominee for Veterans Affairs, pulled out. Just an awful lot of constant turnover in the cabinet, in the West Wing itself. You both have been looking at Washington for a long time. Have you ever seen anything like this before?
I've never seen this level of, you know, revolving door type behavior in the White House. President Trump is now on his third national security advisor, his second Secretary of State in basically a year and a half. His VA chief, the person they nominated to lead the VA, has withdrawn. His EPA secretary is in hot water, and there have been other people who've left.
It would be quicker to say who's not.
Yeah, who hasn't been replaced yet. I mean, we have to remember that Trump supporters might say that part of this is just Trump style. You know, he got famous on The Apprentice show for saying you're fired and being very decisive. But it looks like there's an ongoing vetting problem in the White House where people who are nominated are not being checked out to make sure that they don't have problems that would disqualify them.
We were just, Philippe, talking about big issues like North Korea and Iran. And, you know, one thought that I have here is that all of these distractions with these personnel comings and goings, it's a huge distraction for a president who should ostensibly be focusing on issues like war and peace and the economy and so forth. How big of a problem is it for him?
I think it's not only a distraction, and this president is known for having his mind all over the place and being able to deal at least with petty issues at the same time when he's dealing with the world peace. But there is also a problem, a lack of expertise, I think, especially related to Iran or North Korea. At the State Department, there is a lot of empty seats at the high levels of the ministry. What you can see is that I agree with the vetting process problem. I mean, it's clearly it's with the Veteran Affairs Secretary, the personal doctor of the president. There was a total lack of vetting process there. There is also a kind of toxicity to, being close to this president. When he doesn't like you, it's not good. But when he likes you, it's also complicated.
The problem here is that the president has always said that he hires only the very best people. All evidence.
Well, that's marketing.
That's marketing.
That's communication.
He hires only the very best people, and yet look at some of the problems that these folks have been.
He was also supposed to hire very rich people so that they would not be interested at all in spending public money. And we've seen what's going on with a lot of them.
What do foreigners think when they kind of look at this from abroad?
Oh, I think it's a whirlwind. It's a spectacle. It's a show. It's something that they want every day to know more about. What's going on? What's the new episode? What is the last tweet? I used to say that it's entertaining, it's interesting, sometimes a little bit scary. And we have to wonder, what would we do if this exact movie was not shot in the United States of America, but in some small republic in Central Asia, for instance, with the same president doing the same things, the same tweets, the same public statements? What would the American people say?
He's often compared to people like Berlusconi, the former Italian leader, and this kind of thing. But just to Philippe's point, the distraction from real issues of war and peace in the economy, how big of a problem is it when you have all this turnover? And
it makes it more difficult to govern when your team is constantly changing. And people have to get caught up on the issues and on the details. But it looks as odd and unusual as this presidency is. I think that we're still in the second year, in the beginning of the second year, and we have to see kind of where it goes, because if you look at what he's dealing with, he did get North Korea and South Korea basically to start talking to each other. The Iran deal, which had serious problems, at least the allies now are acknowledging that and talking about maybe trying to work on it. That wasn't happening before. In the Gulf, the Arab monarchies, Sunni monarchies, are talking about doing more to work together and to pick up some of the load that the U.S. military has been carrying in the region. So these are things that he has pushed for, and he's actually accomplishing.
So very unorthodox style of leadership.
Yeah, exactly. Is interesting. There is the show, as I mentioned earlier, but behind that and below there are the policies, and not only on the international stage, but also domestically. I mean, this president is doing things, that's clear. What I mentioned is that you ask about how he's seen, and I'm not sure that from abroad people are very much involved in the intricacy of the changes, the policies, the deregulation, these kind of things. So what they see is the show that this president is putting on screens, and there it's hard to see this president with as a traditional president, of course.
Okay, we're going to have to end it right there. Our thanks to Philippe Gilly from Le Figaro and Oren Durell of USA Today. This program was produced by the Voice of America Current Affairs, our engineer Justin Thwaites, and I'm Paul Brandis of West Wing Reports. Thank you very much for listening.